No, still I'm good.
All good.
Yeah, great. Fabulous. Terrific. Welcome to the panel. Today, discussing the most important news of the week, we have colourful Sydney identity, Ben Fordham.
I thought you were going to say Antoinette Latour.
Hey.
Before we started taping...
Have you not been Googling her recently?
Ben said that he wanted to be introduced as a colourful Sydney identity. He hosts the highest rating morning radio show in Sydney, probably in Australia. At the moment, he says humbly.
Well, you never know. Like
Breakfast with Ben Fordham on 2GB. And Antoinette Latouf, independent journalist, author, and host of the Antoinettes.
That is me.
Fabulous podcast. How's the podcast going? You've only been doing it for a second.
Yeah.
Haven't you?
Oh, it's been a couple of months. It's a lot of fun.
Great.
Yeah.
You and another person called Antoinette talk about
this. She's
Is it only because her name was Antoinette? Is that the reason why
together? The show wasn't initially going to be called The Antoinettes, but every time we had a meeting with our production partner, I would just put like The Antoinettes and DM podcasts. Right. And then they'd be like, you know what? The Antoinettes has...
It's got a certain ring.
It's discriminatory, like, though, isn't it?
Well, to anyone who's not called Antoinette.
Yeah, you can only be Antoinette to get on the podcast.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If ever one of us is unwell or one of us, like, I have to find another co-host who's called
Antoinette.
And it's slim pickings. There aren't a lot of Antoinettes. It hasn't been popular since about 1890.
I reckon if you want to be successful, Ben, you need to find a Ben. Another Ben.
Yeah, the Bens.
And do the Bens.
But then do you have to
Round the Bens.
Do you have to share the money with them? Is that how it works
as
well?
Yes.
We'll talk later about that.
I think
that.
On the money that 2GB pays, you're doing okay.
Yeah.
You could probably split it. You could probably go halvesies and you'd still be all right.
We did try and hire you at one point, Josh Zepp. Are we allowed to spill those kind of secrets?
You never made it. No, 2GB never
2GB
made a formal offer.
2GB made inquiries about securing your services. True or false?
No comment. I never received an offer from 2GB.
Let me repeat. Okay. 2GB made inquiries about securing Josh's services.
In hindsight,
this
isn't recent.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah. Okay. Look, how many headaches could potentially have been avoided? Not just for me, but
or
for
created
everybody.
Created 2GB.
Yeah, that's what I was
I'm
saying.
I'm thinking about all the drama we missed out on.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right, exactly. Look, one of the things in the news this week that I wanted to pick your brains on is this Aussie activist who's on TikTok. And what he does is, in order to resolve the housing crisis, he goes around and identifies properties that are not inhabited, houses that where nobody lives.
Yeah.
He puts together a list so that homeless people and squatters can basically break into the houses and live there. And it's got a bit of controversy about whether or not that's
quasi
is the relevant point there.
Yeah.
I don't know whether so in the United States, I believe you're not allowed to just move into a place if it's uninhabited. But in the UK and Australia, I think if a place has not been occupied for a certain length of time,
right,
you're not allowed to break and enter. But if you can make your way into it without
If your mate does,
then I think you're actually allowed to.
But the publicising of these houses, I mean, I think that is probably technically not illegal.
Well, I don't know, but is it okay?
Well, don't we hear about squatters' rights as well? I mean, it's probably such a niche issue that we're not across the rules are. I've never found myself in a situation where I've had a squatter or I've wanted to be a squatter. But you hear about squatters' rights, that the longer you live in there,
the greater the claim is to stay. I once knew a bloke in the UK, in London, who had been squatting in his place for 20 years. He was a friend of my parents.
Where were the owners?
But I don't know. But then by the time you've notched up enough years and you can prove that you've been paying your electricity and all that and you can prove a connection to the place, then it's yours. Then you own the place. You can actually on-sell it out from underneath the actual owner after a certain amount of time. Who are the people who
own the properties and can afford for them to be
this
sitting
is what I don't
empty.
Understand.
So arguably, like, I don't have a huge amount of sympathy, and I think this is why there's not a lot of pushback on what this activist is doing, because not that many people in the current climate, cost of living crisis, housing insecurity are going to be like, I really feel for those people who have houses that are so empty that they don't even know who's in them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go and vouch. I'm going to go fight for them.
And someone who's sitting on an asset that's probably worth over $1 million and doesn't feel any need to get any revenue out of that by renting it out.
Yeah.
That's what's weird.
We moved into the suburb we live in 7 years ago.
And you're squatting.
And we are, yeah. And no one's told us to go anywhere.
It's amazing. Vaucluse. How many abandoned mansions there are.
The closest house to the shops, as we call it, has been empty the whole 7 years we've been there.
Right. And do you know anything about the animals?
No, we just make up stories.
Yeah, I love that.
Right? Because that's what everyone does.
Is there
kids,
smell of dead bodies emanating from the house?
We're like, you know, and then recently, if there's any movement, recently there was movement there. Real estate agent turned up. And we're like, oh, it's finally happening. But who can afford to have that joint empty for 7 years? I do feel some sympathy for whoever owns the home when they have the squatters move in. If it's a situation where, hey, listen, I'm overseas or I'm doing something and why have the squatters turned up? I mean, you do see those stories occasionally on A Current Affair where someone's gone on a 90-day cruise and they've returned home to the south coast of New South Wales somewhere and they discover that there are six blokes who are living in the lounge room playing PlayStation. So I do have some sympathy for the cruise couple, but I just don't understand how there are that many that are empty. I know at the moment there's the housing minister in the state where we're broadcasting from at the moment, Rose Jackson, who's on a mission at the moment to track down, you know, public housing that's empty. And there are a heap of them as well. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for people when they're trying to get into a public housing unit or home and they're reading all these stories about thousands of them that are sitting
empty.
Well,
you know what? Some jurisdictions, and by the way, I want to come around and look at that place that is empty near your place and
create my own. Well, you're going to be neighbours.
Either movie or just, I love the idea that there's an old guy inside and the kids outside are like, nobody ever goes in. Yeah. Nobody ever comes out. And someone's just shoving food underneath.
It could be the new set for the podcast.
Yeah, I love that.
Hey, there you go.
This is all too short.
There you go. Get rid of this one. Yeah. If you're listening to the podcast, you can see this on YouTube and you can look at Ben Fordham's beautiful face. And you can look at Antoinette Latouf's beautiful face and you can look at my passable
face on
YouTube. The thing about owning a place, isn't a lot of it that there's foreign ownership? I mean, part of what the state government here in the state where we are, New South Wales, wants to do, the Premier has suggested, that's like the governor of the state, has suggested that in the next budget he's going to talk about imposing a tax on foreign ownership. And a lot of the kind of, you know, rumour mill about why places would be empty is because wealthy Chinese investors
and
have bought it up.
It's important that you raise rumour mill because we haven't seen the data on these empty houses or units and who owns them. And so it's kind of easy to be like, oh, the Chinese, the rich Chinese are
you an apologist for Chinese billionaires?
Absolutely
are you
not.
A
I would love
of
to
a
meet
Chinese
one. I would love to. I would love to find where the houses are empty. I may have to squat in one. Let's see how my court cases go. But I just think that there's policy that is built off the back of data that is not readily and publicly available.
Well,
should always.
Data. We've got some data. Do you want me to share some data?
Yeah, but see, Ben Fordham hosts a 3.5-hour show every morning.
Me.
He
this
knows these
me.
Facts.
Just recently we discovered these are newly built homes. The last round of data, which is from the start of this year, 11% are bought by foreign buyers in the state of New South Wales that we're.
But does that mean they're vacant?
No, not vacant.
Yeah, that's what I mean about.
I get what you're saying. There's two different issues, and if you combine them, then it's even worse.
But I mean,
because they're empty, they're not being used, and they're owned by someone overseas. But also, when people are buying homes here and they don't live here, I think when we have so many people who live here and they want a home, like I know that Canada, for example, has gone down that path of saying, okay, we need to put some restrictions in place about people from outside of Canada who just want to own some of our real estate.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've done it with farms. We've done it with crucial assets. And at the moment, housing in general is a crucial asset.
Yeah.
Mm. So, I mean, what some jurisdictions do, which I thought was rather clever, is they look at the water consumption. And so you can go to the utility and you can look at properties that aren't using water.
Yeah,
as
a way to find out what's empty.
Yeah, right.
And then instead of just walking down Ben Fordham Street and going, there's old Mr. Crazy Dude who's hiding inside an ostensibly empty house, you can go, they haven't used any water for the past 9 months. So what's going on there? Then you could overlay that data with the foreign ownership data
sure,
and you could presumably make the conclusion.
Look, and arguably there
but
is
no one's willing to do that because they're all afraid of being called racist.
Sorry to jump in, but I think that if you've got empty houses, I don't care who the owners are.
I only want to target the Chinese.
This is my rank racism coming to the fore.
That's what I was leading into, you see.
Look, I'm with Ben because if I don't care whether it's boomers or Chinese billionaires, if there are houses that are not being used, they either need to be taxed, we need to rethink what we're doing given housing is such short supply.
Why should non-residents be allowed to buy property at all?
Very good question.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, I'm not.
Why
again,
not
I'm
ban not, it? Why not not tax it?
Well, that's what other countries have done.
Why shouldn't?
I can't buy property in plenty of countries. I can't buy property in China.
Right.
Right. Well, I can't buy property in China. But a Chinese person can buy property.
But we rely
and Ben
so
is a multi-billionaire.
I would like to increase my portfolio. As you said, boomers and billionaires, which is my next book.
Boomers and billionaires. Yeah. How I bought the Shanghai skyline for nothing
it's a fair question.
Hope and a dream.
Look, here's the weird thing about it. When you're selling a property, there's nothing the seller wants more than a Chinese buyer turning up, right? Because obviously they've got money.
Well, that's the stereotype that they have money.
But you also hope for it, right? You hope for it. There was certainly a period there in particular where real estate agents would be asking, have we got any Chinese buyers?
Yeah, it's not racist to say that there are a billion Chinese people and that they have an economy which is incredibly unequal and that they have capitalists who are flush with cash and that they regard Australia as being one of the greatest safe havens in the world to store some of that cash
and
in
And their children
assets.
Are coming here to study, right? So you'd also be thinking, all right, well,
yeah, well, we're currently trying to sell our house at the moment, and we had at our auction, it didn't sell.
I saw your full page ad saying Chinese buyers welcome.
We had a lot at the auction, a lot of people of Asian appearance, and because I don't know if they're Chinese, but my agent came up to me and was like, this is excellent. So many Chinese buyers. I was like, oh, do you know these people? Are they Chinese? And he's like, oh, I'm just assuming. And I was like,
oh, no.
I was like, don't assume, Antoinette. Don't you know who I am?
She was the head of the Media Diversity Council of Australia.
Like, interesting assumption. I hope this assumption works in our favour. It did not. We did not settle.
Have you ever seen that famous clip? And if you put into YouTube, I'm pretty sure if you put in agents and Asians, it'll come up, right?
Oh, God.
And I don't know whether you can link it in here, but
it's from a current affairs show, an
Australian TV news show from 1970s, 1980s. And someone had put an ad in a newspaper while selling a home saying no Asians. So the reporter quite rightly turned up and quizzed this guy in his front yard about how could you possibly advertise a property and then put a condition on the ad saying no Asians. And he said, because I don't like them. And then it's like, oh, and the reporter's thinking, God, this is even worse. He's admitting to being a racist. And then he said, I don't like them.
This Highgate isn't the one in London. It's a suburb of Adelaide. But it's the advert's last sentence that brought out a local TV reporter's crusading instincts.
I'd just like to ask you a few questions about the house you've got for sale.
Well, I'd rather not answer it.
Why not?
Because I don't want to. I'm not going to spell my business to anybody over there.
I'm not interested in how much you want for the house. I'm just interested in why you don't want any Asians to buy it and move in.
Well, because the simple reason they're total Asians.
Why don't you want Asians moving into your house?
Because I don't like the Asians, that's all there is.
You don't want them in your place? They're just a mob of crooks,
that's all they are.
And that there's a law against what you're doing?
Well, no one has told me that, and I mean to say even the Asians...
Don't you think it's wrong?
Even the Asians himself, he said, I can have my sign up, if I can get a buyer, I can sell it.
But you won't sell it to an Asian person?
If they come up with a buyer, yes. All they're interested about is just to put the sign up. That's all. I've had no agents. I haven't knocked them back.
Oh, no, agents. Do you know what you're saying? Agents.
I'm sorry. Well, that's a bad expression.
Is that what you say? No agents?
No.
You say no agents.
Agents. Sorry.
Because why do I need them? I can sell the property on my own. And then they realised when he'd called up to put the ad in, he said, put at the bottom of the ad, no agents, A-G-E-N-T-S. The person thought he said Asians. So then the scene ends with the reporter going, oh, I'm sorry, there's been a terrible misunderstanding.
Oh, wow.
And if you're an Asian agent, forget it.
They're the best real estate agents out there, the Asian ones.
So is there a solution to the housing crisis? I mean, this is something that not only Australia is grappling with, but so many different countries around the world. One,
yeah,
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see what like Canada, US, the UK do in terms of foreign investment when it comes to property. I know you say that, you know, China doesn't allow us. I don't often look to China for policy leadership. Mm. Are you aware of what other countries, similar countries?
Well, I know that there are some restrictions. So I think New Zealand and I think Canada and other places
but also,
have done something
this is
on
not
this.
As much as you were joking before, you want to blame it on people in another country.
Yeah.
We've got not a, people in another country, a, Chinese a, people
sorry, specifically
this
Chinese
is a,
people.
This is racial animus
yes,
on my
okay.
part, Ben.
There's a shortage of houses.
Yes. Yeah,
there's a lot of people.
Yeah.
We have migration levels are at record rates.
It's a supply so issue. It's like, an affordability issue.
Surprise, when you – and the other big issue too is that to get anything done, it takes so long to get anything done. I know, for example, I had a – proposal before Strathfield Council, a local council here in Sydney, that was before it for about 18 months. And in the end, we just went, just forget about it.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, you reach the point of going, all right, if you don't want to help us build something here, it's going to make this into a better place.
Yeah, and also like the strata rules about dividing places. I mean, there are so many, and the incentives, the financial incentives for staying towards having your own home. So like what's happening is a lot of boomers, you know, a lot of my friends' parents are now empty nester boomers who live in these massive places. But if they were to downsize it or sell it, then of course that suddenly has tax implications that they wouldn't have if they were just living in their home where they don't have to pay property tax on it. So like should you have to pay a property tax on the home that you live in, like a lot of jurisdictions do have that. I think in the States you have to pay property tax on the basis of the value of your own home, which you don't really have to here. I mean, we have council rates, but it's nowhere near as big. But in the size of the places where an elderly couple are now living, you could fit five families if you subdivided and turned it into or 100 Asians. You know how they love living cheek by jowl. You know, if you had rules,
you are on a mission.
Am I going to get cancelled for turning
I'm trying to escape controversy. Like,
you're not saying it. It's my show.
Yeah, I know, but I'm helping you. I'm platforming you. I'm amplifying you. I'm sitting next to you. But you know how it will be flipped.
Of course.
I'm enabling you.
I'm trying to make you feel uncomfortable, Antoinette. Let's move along and not a moment too soon. There's a discrimination ruling in Australia, which is getting a lot of headlines because one of Australia's most respected art galleries, which is called Mona, which is in Tasmania.
Our most famous gallery.
It's probably the most famous and well there's the old galleries the old beautiful
let's not start a fight
oh here gallery. We go I know I'm gonna get everybody
because you know once I get started on gallery wars
welcome
you'll never
back.
Shut me up
welcome back to Art Gallery Talk with Antoinette and Josh where we go over all of the art galleries in Australia and rank them
and pit them up against one another
so there's the old classic galleries the National Gallery in Canberra but this is a new vibrant, exciting, provocative gallery that's only been around for 20 years or something. And they had an exhibit which was a ladies-only room, ladies-only exhibit.
I'm loving the sound of this.
And Ben, you're nothing if not a feminist, a raging feminazi. And I was there with the kids and
You've got boys, don't you?
No, a boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl, okay.
But she was five, so she wasn't going to go into the room by herself.
Right.
You need to explain what the room is.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know what the room is. It's a ladies' room. I'm not allowed in.
Okay, no, I can tell you.
I
just said it was a ladies' room where only ladies are allowed.
Your setup wasn't sufficient.
All right, thank you, Ben.
Can you set up,
please? Ben, the master of broadcasting.
We're going to have to be your guest and produce you at the same time.
Yeah,
okay, so it is behind some lush emerald green curtains, and when you open, there's male butlers who serve you champagne, and in it's all emerald green, very lush, very regal, and it's got some lovely little pieces, like not many pieces, but it's just a little space. Part of the experience is not the jaw-dropping art pieces that are there. It's more the experience of walking in and someone ushering you in. That is the
And the point of it is to...
To just have a women's space.
Yeah.
Just to have a women's space. That's it.
Yeah.
Within an art gallery, which interestingly, I thought another place would perhaps be a woman's space because there's a wall, a vulva wall of vaginas, which is not a woman's
space. That's not a woman's space.
That's just
art. That?
Yeah.
There are just
Ben's booking his ticket to Hobart tomorrow. Go and see the vulva wall.
Yeah, there's like the whole 100 vulvas on a wall of all shapes and with all different sorts of hairstyles. And I was like, oh, okay, that's not in the ladies' room. That's art.
No.
So I have two daughters, primary school age, and we went in. My husband stayed outside. We went in for like a minute or two. but they did not drink champagne. I am a responsible parent. It was nice. We walked out. They liked the gimmicky feel of, oh, this is just for the ladies. Mm. And we moved on.
I like it as well.
So what's happened now? Can I go back to the news?
Yes,
has that
sure.
been enough of a, is that sufficiently articulate, the description that I neglected to make? Mm. Then a man took the art gallery to court. And said,
New South Wales man.
Why am I not allowed to go into this part of the, you know, the gallery?
Because it's for women.
And everybody said, well, this is ridiculous. We have gay bars only for gay people. We have women, we have men's space, we have men's clubs, we have women's space, safe spaces, we have women's shelters. You know, you're allowed to divide on the basis of sex. But the Tasmanian court has just ruled and said, no. What it said is, if the person had felt that they were offended on the basis of an exhibit, then they wouldn't have a case. Mm. But if the point of the exhibit is not like to offend or to provoke, if it's simply creating a space that is only available for women, and it should also be added that men have to pay the same entry fee, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like the men get a discount
Poor
or something.
Blokes.
But it is Mona is in context, Mona is huge. She could spend all day.
It's not
there.
A large portion. It might only be 2% of the flooring.
So, the court backed
place.
The bloke. Right?
Yeah, so court backed the bloke and said they can't do this.
Based on the discrimination.
There is no artistic, there is no valid artistic. Now, what would be interesting to me is, since this is 2024 and not 1970, and there actually aren't really any places where men hold power and sway where women are not allowed to enter.
But there is. There's a venue in Sydney where we're recording this where women applied to get access to some type of gentleman's club in 2021
yeah,
and that
the
was
Australia
rejected.
Club.
I think there's
one old place where a bunch
And then up the road from there, there's a women's club, the Queen's Club.
Oh, is there?
Same thing. Yeah. Same. They're 200 metres apart. One is just for men.
Right.
One is just for women.
Okay.
But here's the thing. Who are the people who complain about this kind of stuff?
Well, like, Jason is the new Karen. So it's a guy called Jason,
yes.
And he came from New South Wales to Tasmania. He visited there on the weekend, and he was that annoyed that he couldn't enter that
space.
Now,
he wanted
that,
to prove a point, clearly.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So and he's proven.
What's illegitimate about proving a point? That's what the law is all about. You're just trying
more
to
than
test,
the law
the,
is
test what's okay
yes.
and what's not okay.
And I think the law is
but,
flawed.
But
then.
If I'm in an art gallery and then I get to a spot where they say, okay, it's women only behind this little curtain, and then my son Freddie and I sit outside, and my wife Jody and daughters Pearl and Goldie, they go into the women's section, and we sit outside, and they come out 5 minutes
later.
Yeah,
of course. I mean, I went to the place and I didn't sue the.
Yeah.
I did not sue the
annoyed?
Art gallery. No, I wasn't personally annoyed. But now that someone was annoyed and I actually have to think it through, I do understand it. So I mean,
what do you
what
understand?
Would, well, it's lazy curation and lazy provocation. It just, for me, it buys into like this sort of fairly obvious narrative of like, we live in a sexist society and women need
Isn't
special treatment.
Isn't art supposed to make us think?
Yeah, and it's
well,
and
that makes me think.
It doesn't make, no, it
sorry,
didn't
there's
make
a
me
freaking
think.
Vulva wall.
No, it didn't.
It's totally
like,
provocative.
What,
you
what
know,
I'm
no, no,
thinking,
no,
and I haven't been there, right? But what I'm thinking, I'm imagining, okay, I'm supposed to read into this and
totally.
Think what the message is here. And the message is, hey, there are many sections of society in the world
yes.
where men have an advantage.
Yes.
Right?
And so
and this is one where you don't.
Yes.
You sit out in the waiting room.
Is that a new message to you?
But does it doesn't matter
no.
if it's not new.
Is that
it's
a provocative
needed.
Message, an interesting
I think
message?
It's interesting, yeah.
Is it?
I think
I feel
I think
like that's been the elite consensus for decades.
Yeah,
now.
But it might be the consensus, but not all things haven't shifted enough.
You
so
know
I did the maths.
Be,
I did
Hannah,
the maths.
Let me just say yeah. what would be interesting or thought provoking would be if there was a room where only white people could go. Mm. What would be interesting would be if there was a room where only men could go, flipping it on its head.
Yeah.
What would be interesting would be if there was a, you know, a place where only straight people could
but
go.
But generally people-
Like that would be playing around with
the
power hierarchy.
But they are the power brokers. But they are the power brokers already. So that doesn't, that's not, that
Who?
Is the state of play.
Who?
In Australia, men have more power than women. So
yeah,
having a space
exactly.
where-
Exactly. So it's obvious.
But I'm not
so
sure
having
how
women's
that is-
place is women's space
can
is
be
obvious.
Obvious.
Yeah, just it's just not very good, obviously, because it,
you know,
they lost the case.
Yeah,
like it's not an artistic expression of anything particularly like, interesting.
I don't like the we've had examples before where there was one case where there was a meeting of some sort involving the Muslim community, and they had separate seating areas for men and women. You know,
they still do.
You know, and it was like, hang on, but it was at a community event, and other people were turning up going, hang on a moment, why are we segregating people based on male and female? There are some places that are men's sheds. They're designed for men. Can a woman say, hang on a moment, I'm going to take this to some tribunal because I want to be in the men's shed? Yeah, I'm sure you
There's a purpose for the men's shed, which is to provide solidarity, and there's a purpose for women's spaces, which provide solidarity.
I can see the purpose in this.
Well, you know, okay, since you mentioned Muslims, I mean, imagine if what they had done was they said, here's an area where Muslim men can go, but Muslim women can't, or Muslim women can go, but Muslim men can't. Mm. And in so doing, we're going to satirize the one field in our culture where you actually do have legitimate severe sexism and discrimination. Or if it was Jews, for example, where you have some of those Orthodox synagogues where the women sit upstairs and the women downstairs. What if they had a little synagogue where the men have to sit upstairs and the women get to sit downstairs as a way of satirizing religious sexism? Then I think that would be interesting. That would be actually provocative.
What I'm hearing is that you want to be a museum curator and you've got some good ideas for Mona.
I've got some ideas for Mona Part 2, baby.
I think what's interesting about Mona is they've got 20, so the museum has 28 days to either allow men in or for the artist who's in charge of that particular exhibit to pull the exhibit. And from what I've heard, she's leaning towards just pulling it. Because the whole idea was for it to be, she's like, the experience is men's exclusion. And so I'm with her on pulling the exhibit. I'd rather it be gone than Cranky Jason. Yeah. Because in the time that he was there last April, and now it's April. So in a year, and I think this is the thing that pisses a lot of women off, in a year, at least 52 women have been killed at the hands of their current or former partner. There are spaces where—
You're aware that's illegal, right? No, killing women's illegal.
Oh, thank you for telling me that. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Because people always say that.
And unrelated to Mona, but a very important issue.
People always say that as if it's a slam dunk about how women get discriminated against.
No, but as in, we aren't at a place in Australia, despite how better off we are, and I want to put that caveat in, how more freely we live than women in other parts of the world, there are still basic fundamental rights that we do not have.
Well, you do have the right not to be murdered. It's illegal.
But it's not being upheld. We have a fundamental right to safety that's not being upheld.
Well, I mean, that's because there are murderers who are mostly men. How many men get murdered by men?
Right. So we don't have gender pay parity. We can't assume we don't have a level of safety
that
we should afford.
We do have gender pay parity, but that's a whole other thing. Jan Fran did a great thing about.
We don't have gender
pay
equity.
So it's against the law to pay a woman less for the same job than a man in Australia. But if you add up the total amount that women get paid and the total amount that men get paid and divide it by the number of people, women earn less. Because they choose lower paid professions and they take time off to have babies.
I know, that's not what the GIA data.
But a one-to-one, it's illegal to pay a woman less for the same job.
Yeah, and but that's, example, not what the GIA, that's not what the WGIA data shows, though.
What's the WGIA data?
The government women's gender equality agency data.
Yeah, there are ways of fudging data and there are ways of fudging data.
No, but it's the most official and reputable government data.
Let's bring it back to Mona.
I just thought that in that space, if the one thing you really wanted to advocate for, Jason, was your hurt feelings about, this is what riles people up and riles women
feelings,
up.
It's just justice or injustice. It's him feeling like there's a double standard.
He's a sook.
He's a sook who's pointing to a real thing, which is that if you flipped the genders and it was a male-only space, all hell would have broken loose.
I don't think it would.
You don't think that Mamma Mia and the project would have done stories about the space in Tasmania where men are being given a privileged space?
I agree if it was a bar, yes. In an art gallery, I want to be challenged.
Yeah,
I want to see things that are going to make
me
think.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't understand that if you're going into Mona, which is known for controversial and thought-provoking
I just think there'd be more thought-provoking ways of doing it.
Yes. No, I'm with you. Obviously, I'm with you because I didn't sue Mona. But, you know, I also think it's pretty lazy. If your worldview is that in 2024 that we live in a scenario in which we're unaware of the challenges that women face. We're unaware of gender inequality. But it's not suggesting that you're unaware. We're unaware, like, that we're not dealing, that the real core problem is that men walk through this world completely clueless about their own privilege.
But some do.
Well, some do. I mean, some women think they're chickens. I mean, there's all kinds of strange people.
But we're not arguing.
The mainstream opinion in Australia is at the moment perfectly consistent with a fairly lazy attempt at here's a woman's space because women always have had it hard. We've got the memo that women had it hard. Like, I don't think there's
real harm or danger in reminding people that.
No, there's no harm or danger.
I don't think Paul was harmed.
It just means that the $45 that he spent on Mona should have been $44.60.
I'll give him the 40 cents.
I think it also highlights the point that this artist is the only artist that we're talking about out of the Mona gallery.
Yeah, and the truth is,
the
truth is, and she's hilarious. Have you seen some of her interviews?
No.
She gives interviews. She has in the background, even if it's live, I saw her on the project, and a butler comes and pours her champagne, and she's like, "This is hysterical. The men are hysterical." Like, she's just in character of some. I don't know, but she's the best thing ever to come out of this.
All right, fabulous. The other gender thing that's exploded this week is this court case in federal court between a trans woman who is suing the creator of a women's only app, which is called Giggle. It's like a safe space for women to have a social media environment. It was sometimes reported as a.
I've never even heard of it.
No. Well, it's
Giggle versus because, Tickle.
Giggle versus Tickle, because the trans woman's name is Tickle. Is Roxanne Tickle.
This is so.
So Tickle v Giggle. So had you never heard of this case?
I saw your podcast app. And when I first saw Giggle versus Tickle, I was like, is this. So like satire?
Yeah, no. Her real name is Roxanne Tickle, and the app is called Giggle. But you haven't heard of the app because it's never got off the ground because it's been embroiled in court proceedings.
Right, okay.
But again, this is similar to Mona in that Tickle wanted to go into a place that was not designed for Tickle.
But trans activists say it was designed for Tickle because Tickle's a woman. Well, it says on her birth certificate that she's a woman.
She's had the gender reassignment surgery.
But the way that the app worked is that in order to sign up and be a member, they wanted a safe space for women only, right? A little bit like that room in the gallery. So as part of the sign-up process, you had to, like you've got to do a lot of the time, you grab your phone.
Yeah, but her birth certificate says she's a woman.
You take a photo of yourself. And it's uploaded to the thing. And then essentially AI determined you're a woman. And AI determined on Tickle that Tickle wasn't a woman.
What happened. Actually, what happened was that the AI passed her and then manually she was booted off when they did a review and she didn't. But the question is whether or not biological women have a right to have, much like the Mona thing, a space for themselves from which they exclude trans women. And it's extraordinary to me that this story hasn't been covered by the ABC, by Mamma Mia, by the project. No one wants to talk about the potential conflict between trans rights and women's rights.
And I think that's the more interesting part. We can get into the granular detail of this app and was it AI and should she be there in safe spaces. I think the reticence amongst, and what you pointed out, usually progressive spaces, bar The Guardian, because The Guardian has done op-eds and news articles, that there has been a reluctance.
Probably always critical of the app.
The news stories have been pretty straight.
Yeah, the news stories have been straight, and I think yes, probably it was a sympathetic op-ed, but at least it would be amazing to me
if there was an opinion piece in The Guardian that sided with the app.
Sure, fair enough, and I can't say that I could tell you
that the 2GB Breakfast Show has covered this issue.
Oh, there we are.
And we've interviewed Sally Grover, who's the lady who set up the Giggle app.
Yeah,
but you know, again, I see Roxanne Tickle as a troublemaker, a bit like the bloke who wanted to go into the area at Mona. It's like there are some places that are not for you. There are a lot of places have opened up for you and they will continue to do so, but there are some places that someone's gone to the trouble of designing something for a certain type of person, and these are women, and obviously the person who set this one up, biological women. So if you don't fit into that category...
Well, I think the interesting part is that it's a really important test case for our discrimination law, and I think that's what we should be talking about. But there's such reticence even amongst progressive circles to have the discussion about the caveats and the grey areas around trans issues, because you may fundamentally believe that trans people do exist and a trans woman is a woman, but there are still issues within the law and there are still concerns about gender reassignment surgery.
What do you think?
I mean, I don't know this case too closely, but I understand and I'm part of that reticence to talk about trans because I believe that trans women or trans men exist.
Everyone knows they exist.
And have a right to be protected. How within the scope of discrimination laws? I don't know. I'm also wary of there's a lot of attention and a lot of kind of moral panic about what trans women are going to do in private spaces that I go into, like a bathroom that's not backed by, you know, it's potentially going to be violent and sexual assaults that's not backed by evidence. So sometimes...
Well, when you say it's not backed by evidence, what does that mean?
As in, where are the criminal cases that suggest that this has been happening?
They are there. They
in Australia?
I don't know. But yeah. I mean, according to Sally, about 10% of the Queensland prison population in women's prisons are now trans women. And some cohort of those people will be guilty of sex crimes, and some cohort of the women who they're sharing those prisons with will have been victims of sex crimes, and they're now having to share a space with a woman who may have a penis.
Yeah.
And you know, there are cases absolutely in the UK that there have been a number of cases of women being assaulted in rape shelters and in prisons by trans women, which I agree completely concur with you, Antoinette, that there's a conservative moral panic about
this.
Yes, but I think because of that moral panic, it makes reasonable people very
project,
difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah, it makes it hard to talk about. But that's our job. We have to.
Well, I agree with you.
Use the sport example. I remember 5 or 6 years ago, I started talking about transgender athletes in sport and saying this is a big issue. It's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I was told very early on, oh, mate, I'd be careful about talking about that. And I said, but it's such an obvious one. I mean, if someone is born male and they're then competing against females, it's so obvious that in most cases they're going to have a physical advantage over the girls, right? Mm. Now, I remember a friend of mine at one stage, then over the 5 or 6 years since, it's become bigger and bigger and bigger because of the Leah Thomas case, the swimmer in the United States who started winning all of the awards and all of the medals. I had a friend say to me, why are you so obsessed with this case? And I said, because it's not fair. She goes, why is it not fair? And I said, well, look, do you want me to show you some footage? And when you have a look at footage of, for example, we have a case in Australia, Hannah Muncy, born male, transitioned to female, played handball as a male and then became a female and then played with the women. And AFL as well, Australian football, when you see Hannah on court and the size of Hannah against the other competitors, you don't have to be an expert in equality or gender science or anything else to say that's not fair. There's something about that. Now, I want to protect that because I just don't think that I want to see in a race, I don't want people having an advantage because they've got something pumped into their veins in a race.
Mm.
And I don't want to see someone have an advantage in a race because they've got bigger bones or bigger muscles.
No, and I agree with all of that sentiment. What's been interesting as an observer, and I don't have strongly held or very invested views in this space. But
is that because you're afraid of having those views?
Not afraid because I'm concerned about the harm that the moral panic is having, that I'm reluctant unless I understand more and do more work. And this is laziness on my part, do more work to understand the legislation, understand that data.
But that sounds like equivocation. Isn't the solution to the moral panic to not get panicked and to just say things as plainly as Ben just did?
Yeah, but I have similar views in that there are biological differences in most cases where men will have an advantage over women in sport. What I've found interesting as an observer is people who generally have no interest in women's sport or generally have no track record in women's rights kind of punching in and being like, now we've got to protect women.
Do you know why that is?
And I'm like,
what? That is?
You never cared about women in any other arena.
It's because the usual...
I'm not suggesting that's you.
The usual suspects who should have been taking up this fight on behalf of women have been silent and absent.
Sure.
So in the absence of them getting involved, other people go... Well, I'm now going to get involved. I highlighted a case when I started talking about this 6 years ago of a runner in the United States who was always ranked out of the top 400, right, as a male.
Oh, right.
Became female, number one. That was one example. I'm like, that doesn't seem to me like fair. when you appreciate that with swimmers, they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and they get in a pool in the middle of winter and they stare at that black line for hours on end, all because they want that one chance of winning that gold medal. That chance should not be taken away by someone who's got an unfair advantage over them. And it's the silence that's forced other people to step up and speak about it. And the Leah Thomas case is a classic example of, I think there's a woman who really highlighted that case. I think her name is Riley Gaines. I might be wrong, but she's kind of become a big figure in the States over this. She tells the story that the first time she was beaten by Leah, they actually tied. They touched the wall at the same time. So they were like, okay, you guys are both first. They had one trophy. And they explained to Riley that Leah will be holding the trophy. And she was like, and they said, look, the decision's been made. Leah's going to be holding the trophy. And she kind of felt straight away like, has this been predetermined here that we want to be seen to be so accepting and so welcoming that we're going to make it unfair for someone like me to win the race?
And I understand how that's unfair. I just do wonder in all of these discussions, like, how many people are going to be Olympians? Like, okay, the idea that people become trans, to win a gold medal, to steal a gold medal?
It's not about becoming an Olympian. If you have a look at cycling, like, cycling at the moment is a honeypot for athletes who were once male, who are now female, to win prizes, win sponsorship, win awards, win opportunities. A ridiculous number of male-born cyclists are dominating female cycling. That's unfair to women. I'm going to go into battle.
Also, I mean, you just have to look at it. You don't have to talk about the Olympics. You can just talk about your local community soccer field where the people who are picked for the soccer, I mean, if you've got a bunch of 15-year-olds and you know, there are only so many people on a side. You know, so one girl, if there is a person who went through puberty, a girl who went through puberty as a male and has male bone structure and male muscle tone and is now on, on hormones, then she is taking a position away from a biological female. I completely agree with you, Antoinette, that, and I asked Sal Grover if you don't hear the portion of the podcast with Sal Grover in which I asked this question, then you're not a premium subscriber on Substack, because we had a great 40-minute conversation after the free feed ended, where I was saying to her, don't you feel a bit weird about having such weird bedfellows that basically you've got these far right kind of reactionaries on Sky News After Dark, or you've got right wing rat bags writing for some tabloid, and all of a sudden it's the most important thing in the world for them to celebrate women's rights, when actually a half century ago they would have been the ones opposing feminism and they would have been the ones fighting against women's rights. And she made the point, look, you try to get your word out however you can get your word out. And I think it's the job of people like us, and including people like you, Antoinette, to have the balls, pardon the expression, to stand up and go, you know what, this is something that reasonable people should be talking about, so that we don't cede the territory to the right and make it only something that they can
talk about. I interviewed a guy about a year ago. He wrote to me and he said, look, I've heard you on air talking about the whole issue to do with trans athletes and whatever. And I always put in the comment that I say, I want trans people to be able to play sport. I want them to be able to compete. I want them to be able to be on the field and do whatever. But when it comes to competition, professional competition, I don't think that this is fair. I also support the idea of having open categories. At some point, we should be having, at Olympic Games, at Commonwealth Games, open categories where it's male, female, open. And funnily enough, there would be a very lucrative market for someone to create some of those competitions outside, say, Olympics, of open. It'd attract a lot of sponsorship. There'd be a lot of corporates who would see that as somewhere they'd like to put their money. But I just feel like if we were all standing there on the sideline watching a game and we saw there was an unfair physical advantage going on a football field, I feel like we would all speak up.
Yeah, but the trans activists would say there's always an unfair advantage of some kind, because that's what aptitude is. Like, some people are born, Ian Thorpe's born with size 16 shoes, so it's better in the pool.
Off the sporting field and into that app, have you got a strong opinion as to whether Tickle should be on Giggle?
Well, I've got a strong opinion about what the law currently states, and without wanting to interfere with the proceedings of the current case, it certainly strikes me that the 2013 version of the Sex Discrimination Act, which the Gillard government rewrote, is pretty clear that a person who says that they are a woman is a woman. and the Australian Human Rights Commission has made a submission to in this case against Sal, against the app,
yep.
saying that sex is not binary and not biological. That's a lie. It is definitely biological. Gender might not be. Your gender expression might not be. But sex, you know, in the mammal, in the whole animal yeah. kingdom and the whole, you know, the idea of there being one half of the population that has sex genes, you know, of one, a double X or an XY, the idea that you might have, you know, I don't think I need to explain what yeah. a man is and what a woman is. Then the Human Rights Commission goes on to say that you can change your sex by medical procedure, you can change it by changing your birth certificate, or you can change it by any other means not listed here. And right. therefore, you're really opening the door to the erasure of the ability of biological women to conceive of themselves as a group. I'm not a woman, so I don't have a dog in that fight. I find it curious that so many feminists...
Well, with Tickle, because she... does and has identified as a woman and been a woman for several years. It's on her birth certificate. She's done the gender reassignment surgery. I see her as a woman and I don't mind sharing an app space with her. Would I want to tackle her in a rugby game? I don't know. I'm not a very athletic person. I don't play sports, so I haven't given that huge amount of thought. Probably not.
Yeah.
I personally, if I was using an app, I would not care.
Woman being on an app with me.
But the question here is not should there be apps that include trans woman, women as women. The question is, should there be allowed to be one app that is only for biological women, created by a right. woman who only wants it to be for biological women?
I think beware
that's
that,
what the, that's what's testing. The
that's
law.
What's being tested.
Sure.
I think the guy who's trying to get into to Mona is a shit stirrer. I think the person trying to get in the into the app is a shit stirrer.
But only and one I has think, been historically marginalised yeah. and not the other, and that's the trans person and not
and,
not
and I think people who are born male and insist on competing against females at the elite level are shit stirrers as well.
I mean, here's an interesting thought experiment. If the shoe was on the other foot and there was something that men did that was being persistently undermined by trans men, do you think men would have put up with it for a second? We wouldn't have a bar of it. There's a reason why the posters and the placards at the pro-trans rallies all say trans women are women. Mm. They never say trans men are men.
Yeah.
Because men go, fuck off.
I
now, that may be bigotry, or it may be that men have more of a backbone and women and feminists are currently confused.
Or that when we talk about the physicality, I mean, that's a disadvantage. If I go to and transition into a male, I'm not going to have an advantage.
That's my point. That's my point.
In my thought experiment,
flip the power and suppose that there was some pursuit in which you actually did have an advantage as a trans man.
Mm.
Right? We wouldn't tolerate it. Be like, no, fuck off.
Yeah, maybe.
So I kind of started saying something and then lost my thought because I'm slightly confused.
I think I interrupted, sorry. Like
I had a guy contact me and say, look, I had a son called Max, who's now my daughter Maxie. And I said, really? Like really young, I think 12 years old. And this was a process that happened over a number of years and whatever. And so he came into the studio and I interviewed him. But what was interesting is he said, but I agree with you on the sports stuff.
Like he said, trans people who have the same views.
Yeah, I want you to, he goes, I want you to understand what I'm going through as a father and what would you do in this situation? I'm like, well, I think I'd probably be doing what you're doing, which is listening to your child.
Absolutely.
And you know, some real big heart-to-hearts with Max, who's now Maxie, and beautiful family. I've got to know them reasonably well. But he just said, on the sports thing, if Maxie one day said, okay, I want to be on the Olympic swimming team, he reckons as a father he would be doing his best to say, listen, I'm not sure about that, you know?
I mean, it's interesting. And I think the fact that you're raising the case of somebody who's known from a very early age is important as well, because one thing that we've sort of muddled in all this because it's so hard to talk about and because people are afraid of being called bigots or whatever is that we haven't done a very good job of differentiating this tiny cohort of people who've existed across time and across space in so many different cultures who from the moment they're of the youngest age just feel like they're born into the wrong body. And these people need our love and compassion. The only thing we can do is to help them to transition and to, you know, to not discriminate against them in any way. But then I think people feel like there's also an ideology that has grown up in the past 5 years especially, which says there's no such thing as men and women, sex is binary, sex and gender are the same thing, there are no biological differences, you can basically choose whatever your sex is, and you'll have, you know, friends of mine who have kids in who are 15 years old in inner city kind of woke social justice type schools where half the class is trans.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, the trans.
And you can't criticize that without being seen as a bigot about the other. But
I wonder what it's like is for the gay and lesbian community, right? Where you, like, the trans activists have been so strong. There must be some gay and lesbian activists who kind of think, okay, we really took our time with our fight. Like, you know, well, the gay and lesbian community took a long time to get their point across. The trans activists have come out with fireworks and they come out.
But there's also a lot of unease growing among the gay community. Yeah, about whether or not, like, there's a growing opposition to gay marriage, especially in the States. There's worry about wind back to gay rights, about whether gay marriage could conceivably be overturned by a future Supreme Court in the States. And a lot of the backlash against gay rights is being fueled by middle American, small C conservative people who are just a bit confused by this whole gender stuff that's being shoved down their throats.
Do you think as a result of the trans and gender stuff that there's being pushback on?
Yes, I think people regard it as being the same, thing. And if they don't want their kids growing up in a world in which they're just told that there's no difference between men and women, then they also regard it as being they don't want to grow up in a world in which blokes can marry each other.
And to your point, Josh, I think I agree. You're right that more people need to have, here we go, uncomfortable conversations and navigate these complexities. Otherwise, the result is a growing pushback by, you know, I see within my culturally conservative and religiously conservative community a lot of concern about sort of gender ideology more broadly, and that's probably led them to be more homophobic than they used to be. And I think it's actually, it causes far more damage to a broader section of people than it does bringing people along.
Do you have the pronouns on your, like, at the bottom of your email? Do you have the?
I don't.
She, her.
I don't, but I have. It doesn't bother me if somebody does.
I don't use.
You don't judge them a little bit, so just deep inside. You don't go, you're a bit of a coward.
A bit of a what?
Coward.
No.
Why are you a coward for doing that?
Because I don't think they really believe it. I don't think they believe that there's any ambiguity. I don't think they think that anyone would be confused.
Yeah.
I think they're just doing it to signal to other people that they're part of the team.
I don't do it. But it doesn't. I can't say I really take note of anybody else's either. Doesn't bother me.
I've got a mate who works in a company with 800 employees, and at one stage he was told, "Listen, we're going to have this at the bottom of all of our emails from now on. So, you know, you've got the email address, the mobile number, the whatever, and then it's going to be the he, him, or the
yeah,
she,
that's,
her, or
that
the
seems
they,
like a PwC
he, yeah, he
Deloitte
said,
thing.
Why? Because it was his job that he had to go and approach these 800 people and say, you need to fill. He was like, why? Has someone raised this? Has it been brought to, and they went, no, we just thought we should.
I always think
that sometimes you don't have a choice. I'm not saying that the people who don't have a choice are cowards. That the HR people who make the rule are cowards.
I always think an opt-in system like that is far better.
But don't you see
that
too?
Like, if you want to, add it. If not, don't.
I saw a TikTok video from a recruitment person, this woman, and she was saying, just so you know, I'm a job recruiter. And when I see the he, him, she, her, they, them, whatever, I think you're going to be a pain in the ass to deal with.
and I was like,
you know what? Preach.
No.
You're saying something that I'm probably too afraid to say.
No,
but
it's such a double standard.
That would be true.
It's such a double standard because the recruiter is then going to go to this HR department who is rolling out all of these inclusive, inverted commas, not inclusive policies. Like, it's just, there's so much corporate bullshit that it's confusing. So that person may or may not actually have much affinity to pronouns, probably thinks they have a better chance of getting a job if they include it because that's what all their friends at Westpac tell them.
That's the coward part.
That's what all their friends at Westpac tell them they do, and, you know, Deloitte has it at the bottom of their – all these large companies. I don't know.
But so just to wrap that up, Antoinette, I mean, since you say that it's important that we should have these conversations, I'll give you the opportunity to have the actual conversation. Do you think that it's legitimate for biological women to have spaces of their own?
On an app, no, that doesn't bother me.
Bother you, or nobody should be allowed to do it?
I don't really have strongly held views on it. Like, I'm not going to.
But that's just because you know that.
No,
your
no, I don't.
Are going to jump
no,
down your
I don't. Because I would
something.
Say in sport, I see the issues in sport because there are disadvantages to women. I see that in an app.
And the fact that you might be called a TERF and have to put up with weeks of hate on Twitter.
Have I ever shied away from things I really believe in if I think I'm going to be criticised?
No, no. But Josh, here's the thing, right? If you wanted to create a club, and let's forget whether it's an app or a club or a space or whatever it is, and it was just for gay, Jewish, ex-employees of the ABC, and I didn't fit into that category, that's fine by me. I don't care if there's a club just for Lebanese people, if there's a club just for
women. But there are dating apps like that, dating apps for...
But why is it? Why is it that on the one category of the way you were born that all of a sudden we go, oh, no, you can have exclusive clubs for everyone else, but on that one thing you're not allowed to? Why?
That's because we have all come to agree somehow without having the conversation really, but somehow through stealth, activist groups have got the law to agree that the category of female includes biological males who have transitioned. And transition could mean simply declaring it to be so over a sufficiently long period of time with enough, a sufficiently emphatic emotion.
We might need to go back at some stage to that change, the Julia Gillard change, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's probably the only solution. Or the solution is feminists have to be cool with women with penises being in whatever environment is for women.
Why do you want to be on an app with these nasty people who you despise anyway? I don't get it. If these people have got these strongly held views that they only want to hang out with biological women, then why would you want to be on their frigging app in the first place? Go and find another app. Create your own app. Stop trying to barge your way into places where you have not been invited.
Yeah, but that to the trans activist sounds someone in the 1960s saying, why do the black people want to sit at our lunch counters? They've got their lunch counters. Why do they have to come into our pubs? There's the Aboriginal pub next door. Why do they have to come into our pub?
We need to have a trans activist and put that to the trans activist. Like, why would you want to be in that? In that space, if you're not,
they would
say that,
they would say that's not the point. It's a test case, much like the Mona thing. It's not about me wanting to be. It's about, do I have a human right to be regarded as the sex that it says on my birth certificate, as the sex that I feel that I am? It's a matter of principle.
Okay.
So,
I'll be.
I mean, I'm still fuzzy about Antoinette's position.
Well, I think you, as
a feminist, you're okay with women who have conventionally male genitals.
I told you
like
I am. On an app, yes. I have a trans friend who shares, I've never felt unsafe with two.
No, you're okay with that. You're okay with them having the right to prevent the existence of a space that excludes them.
Say that question again.
It's not a question of whether or not you'd be okay on the app. You're okay with that woman, that trans woman, being able to force everybody else to include them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. On the app, yes. In all spaces, in all spaces, okay. Sport not so much, as okay. I said, not okay. Sports, but on apps.
But okay, I mean, social environment, it would be a.
I've had no issues. Having said that, I've probably had interactions with two or three trans people. As in my life, I've got I have one trans friend who I used to work with. There's so much discussion about trans and coming into our spaces, and I'm like,
is your trans friend a he, him, or a she, her, or they, them?
Transition from male to female.
Okay.
Works in the
one
media.
One thing Sal said that I thought was interesting
is
where
are all these trans people taking over? Because I operate in media circles, art circles, creative circles, progressive circles, and I don't even know.
Well, that's because you're surrounded by that. So
I'm telling you, they're on the bike.
This whole panic of they're coming and take over. Where are they?
Well, you have the good fortune of not having, had a bad encounter with any of them. One thing that Sal says is, that feminists who are pro-trans, they'll think of themselves as pro-trans. Sal would say she's pro-trans as well. But the feminists who think of themselves as being on the right side of this argument will often think about the nicest man and the nicest trans woman that they could imagine. Mm. They don't think about the worst. She says the reason why trans women shouldn't be allowed in women's safe spaces is the same reason that my father shouldn't, even though he's the best man ever. Yeah. Because you have to draw a boundary around the whole cohort in order to exclude the bad apples. It's not good enough to be like, oh, I've been into lots of bathrooms with lots of trans women and never had a problem.
And look,
you just mentioned 56 women were killed last year. That means that 13 million weren't.
I
walk through my life and I never meet male murderers. There's not a problem.
If I was the spin doctor or the PR guy for the trans community, I'd be saying, hey, listen, can we pull back on a couple of these areas here where we're the sport thing and some of these other things? Let's not get involved in these fights.
I mean, you're putting your finger on exactly my main concern.
I don't think it helps the community.
I'm part of this community. I mean, I'm not trans, but I'm part of the LGBTQIA+ community. I know lots of trans people, and I know lots of trans people who are really uncomfortable with the heat that is being generated by all these controversies.
That's Maxie's dad. He's
and
saying
just be like, just let us live our life. We just want to live our lives, and we'd rather this not become a national firestorm every time. You know, just. Take the win.
That's where I say that if you think of Maxie, right, and that's what this father was saying, it's hard. He goes, because every 5 minutes now there's another story and another, you know, a lot of them involving sport, which I cover. But it's, you know, I don't think it's helping a young person like Maxie grow up.
And that's not to put all the blame on the extreme trans activists, because the conservative reactionary media is also guilty of a moral panic here. But the two sides embolden each other. And if it was just us having the conversation, everything would be fine. Trans people would have all of the rights that are meaningful to them.
Yeah.
I'm also conscious
there's no trans person here and I can't pretend. I can't. But
yeah,
none
quit
of us
that
can
bullshit, Antoinette. I won't have a bar of it.
No,
I don't buy into any of the kind of like, oh, you know, we don't have standing to talk about.
We don't have trans, but I can't. We can't purport to say that we would be able to. We would have this conversation and be able to give trans people what they want. I don't know what all trans. I can't know what trans people.
Nobody's
what
talking about all trans people. Yeah, he might
you
be a trans.
Know
man.
This is true. This is true.
Well, exactly. What kind of conclusions are you jumping to? Yeah,
I'm with you, Antoinette. That if we were talking about what it's like to have the lived experience of being trans, then we'd be out of line. But talking about the way that I'm sick and tired of this idea that nobody is allowed to talk about how we structure our society. Like, we all have buy-in here. We're all part of a demos. We're all trying to figure out how to muddle through and get by in this crazy democracy we call Australia. So we're all allowed to talk about how we want to relate to race and gender
we are.
And sexuality.
But as I said, I probably benefit from interacting with more trans people because I know three. You know, and so it's
not a lot out there.
Well, that's the other point I'm
making.
Except
for you, man.
That's the other point I'm making. The amount of time and effort spent talking about trans people or pushing back against trans people is really disproportionate to the population and I think the threat that they supposedly pose.
Yeah, absolutely. They don't pose a threat.
Exactly.
They don't pose a threat. You know, we're just talking about whether or not there's an interesting contradiction between women's rights and the rights of that minority. Meanwhile, moving to international news, Joe Biden says that the United States is considering dropping its legal pursuit of Julian Assange. He was asked this just briefly by a reporter. Well, I don't know how much credence, Ben, you give these kinds of remarks. When a reporter thrusts a microphone in front of the leader of the free world as he's walking
and
along
he's like,
with the Japanese Prime Minister and he says, we're looking at it.
Yeah.
Should we be reading tea leaves on that?
No, we shouldn't be reading too much into it, but if it is true, it makes you wonder what's the fuss been about for all of these years. I mean, we know
it's 14 years.
I know. It's and, like, you know, it reaches a point where you've got to say, okay, enough's enough. The bloke was a journalist, if you can call him a journalist. Well,
that's
who,
a big, yeah.
Who, yeah, that is a big
question. I'm using that loosely. I think with WikiLeaks, I think when they first came along, I can remember they released a video of a really horrific scene.
To hear the rest of this conversation, go to uncomfortableconversations.substack.com/listen and you will get your own personal premium podcast feed with at least 3 extra episodes of the podcast every month and heaps of extra stuff, including the remainder right now of the fabulous conversation you've just been hearing. If it was worth listening to this much of, don't rob yourself of the rest. Pull out your phone right now and search for Uncomfortable Conversations with Substack.